welcome to the September 10th, 2024 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please turn off or silence your cell phones. This meeting is being webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in a physical location and is also available via remote access. For people who only want to listen or watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it is your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera, if you have one. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute and your camera turned off. You can remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of your item, and then you may choose to exit the meeting or continue. Ed, will you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Sure.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, before we continue, will the clerk please do a roll call?
Chair Satin?
Present.
Vice Chair Perez? Absent. Board Member Beltran Serrano? Board Member Gonzalez? Absent. Board Member Music?
Present.
Board Member Wright?
Here.
Chair Satin, we have a quorum.
Thank you. Okay, the purpose of this public meeting is for regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties within the Colorado River Basin region regarding water quality issues. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any persons wishing to speak should have submitted a speaker request as described in the agenda instructions. For those items listed on today's agenda, you will make your comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify any speakers who have submitted speaker cards for the public forum.
We have no speaker cards.
All right. We'll now move on to agenda item 3, which is review and approval of the minutes for the board's prior meeting on July 9th, 2024. Do I have a motion and a second?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Normally, we would be having our state water liaison update. However, our liaison is not attending this morning, so are we skipping this item? Okay. Okay. Next item is closed session. Council, are there any matters for discussion in closed session?
In accordance with Government Code Section 26, Subdivision A1, the board will meet in closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, or evaluation of the performance of the executive officer.
Okay, the board will now leave the Zoom meeting platform to hold closed session, and we will let you all know when we come back. Thank you. All right, we are back from closed session and are returning to item 6 on the agenda, which is the uncontested calendar. All items appearing on the uncontested items calendar are acted upon by the board in one motion without discussion. At this time, there is one item on the uncontested calendar, agenda item 6, which is an order for substitution of parties and rescissions of multiple existing orders. All right, big breath. Orders 96-001, R7-2021-0012, and R7-2005-0097 are being rescinded. Order 96-001, Inert Waste Management Gypsum Facility, R7-2021-0012, Needles Waste Management Facility, and R7-2005-0097. Lucerne Valley Waste Management Facility have been enrolled under the Closed Landfills General Order, which was adopted in 2022. Next, Turtle Rock Homeowners Association will replace Penka Capital Incorporated, Turtle Rock and 29 LLC as the permitted discharger under Order R7-2006-0036. Next, Desert Knoll Incorporated will replace Sunwest Development LLC as the permitted discharger under Order R7-2006-0057. Finally, orders R7-2022-0001 and R7-2022-0002 are being rescinded. These orders are no longer necessary because the Victory Pass Solar Project and the Erica Solar Project have been completed. Turning now to consider it. Do we have a vote here? We're voting later, right? Yeah, okay. Turning now to consideration of the uncontested calendar, does any board member wish to remove item 6 from the uncontested calendar? Hearing none, if any member of the public wishes to remove item 6 from the uncontested calendar, you need to have filled out a speaker card. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards?
No, there is not.
Awesome. All right, can I get a motion in a second?
So moved.
Second.
A roll call, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, okay. Proceeding now to the contested and discussion of calendar of items for adoption, beginning with agenda item 7, stipulated administrative civil liability order for Coachella Valley Water District. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 7, which is a settlement agreement and stipulation for entry of administrative civil liability order for the Coachella Valley Water District. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
I would like to remind my colleagues that this is an up or down vote on the proposed settlement agreement before us. This is not an evidentiary hearing, and we are not adjudicating allegations and violations. So I'm going to dispense with the swearing in of people who will speak on these items. These enforcement matters are being handled pursuant to procedures where the team prosecuting the enforcement actions, the prosecution team, acts separately from the team assisting the board in making its decisions, the advisory team. This is referred to as a separation of functions. The advisory team is represented by the board's executive officer, Paul Rasmussen, and attorney David Lancaster from the Office of Chief Counsel. The prosecution team is represented by the board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Jose Cortez and Kevin Gonzalez, and finally, attorney David Boyers, assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. These teams have acted independently of one another throughout all phases of these enforcement actions and will continue to do so until the matters are concluded. Please state your name and affiliation before testifying. The order of the speakers for this item are presentation by Kevin Gonzalez, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, after which I will close the hearing. So if we could start with the presentation by staff member Gonzalez, that would be great.
Test, 1, 2, 3. Good morning, Board Chair Satin and members of the board. My name is Kevin Gonzalez, and I am a water resource control engineer in the land disposal unit. My presentation this morning is regarding a proposed settlement agreement and stipulated order regarding alleged violations resulting from a sanitary sewer overflow involving the Coachella Valley District CVWD Wastewater Reclamation Plant Number 10, located in Palm Desert, Riverside County. The prosecution team consists of myself, Jose Cortez, Cassandra Owens, and Michael Perez from the Region 7 office, as well as David Boyers from the State Water Board Office of Enforcement. And the discharger is also present. Next slide. This presentation will start by showing the location of the facility and some satellite images while providing background information. Then I will summarize the details of the sanitary sewer overflow, go through the enforcement timeline, and briefly go over the upgrades that CVWD has made to prevent future spills from occurring. David Boyers of the Office of Enforcement will then give an overview of enforcement policy, penalty methodology, and break down the policy factors that were used to calculate the final liability for this settlement. We will then provide the prosecution team's recommendation and offer to assist in answering any questions or comments from the board members and the public. Next slide. Let's begin by getting a general idea of the facility's location. On screen is a satellite photo showing the location of CVWD's Water Reclamation Plant Number 10, also known as WARP 10, which is located along the White Water River Channel in Palm Desert, Riverside County. The facility, which is marked by the yellow star on the right-hand side of the image, is about 3 miles from the Region 7 Water Board office, which is boxed in orange. Next slide. For some general background, WARP 10 provides preliminary, primary, secondary, and tertiary treatment of municipal wastewater. Some of the orders that WARP 10 is enrolled in are listed on the slide. They include the statewide sanitary sewer system general order, the Regional Water Board's Waste Discharge Requirements Order, which was updated this year, and the Department of Drinking Water's permit for recycled water. On average, Warp 10's influent flow is about 8.4 million gallons per day. 6 million gallons of tertiary treated recycled water are produced per day, and about 2.4 million gallons are discharged as secondary treated effluent to unlined ponds on site. The image on the upper right-hand side depicts the five lined secondary effluent storage ponds regulated under the current 2024 order, which are used to maintain adequate flows within the facility's treatment process and to store excess wastewater during wet weather events or storms. The image on the lower right depicts the nine southern percolation ponds where the secondary effluent is discharged, and these ponds have a capacity of approximately 17.6 million gallons. Next slide. I will now begin talking about the sanitary sewer overflow. The table shown on screen details some of the information related to the sanitary sewer overflow, or SSO. The spill occurred on September 22, 2020, when untreated wastewater spilled into the Whitewater River stormwater channel for about an hour. The cause of the spill was due to an unexpected shutdown at the influent pumps. This shutdown occurred because the uninterruptible power supply failed, causing the programmable logic controller to lose power from both the commercial and battery backup power. The loss of power caused a snowball effect, which disabled the emergency audible beacon warning light and the supervisory control data acquisition high water alarms. As a result, the two emergency secondary influent pumps were not activated and failed to pump the influent wastewater through the plant's headworks. In total, there were 156,639 gallons spilled, but about 28,000 gallons were recovered, for a net spill of 128,639 gallons. Next slide. Here are two pictures that depict the locations of the spill before it occurred. The picture on the left illustrates the starting point of the spill at the junction boxes adjacent to Cook Street, while the picture on the right illustrates the stormwater channel under typical dry conditions. Next slide. Here are two pictures that depict the location of the spill. The picture on the left illustrates the starting point of the spill at the... Well, on the left-hand side, there's a picture of the construction equipment that's cleaning up the spill, and on the right-hand is the spill before the construction crew arrived at the spill. So, next slide. Let's see. Give me 1 second. I think I messed up my slides. Here we go. For a better view, here's an aerial image of the Google Maps where the spill occurred. The point of failure occurred at Warp 10's headworks, indicated by the yellow star, by the yellow arrows. The spill surfaced northwest of the location onto Cook Street, starting at the tip of the blue arrow. The spill then ran about 1,300 feet down Cook Street into the stormwater channel, as shown by the green arrows. During the containment and collection of the spill, CVWD's collection crew constructed an earthen berm to prevent the spill from running further down the channel and to collect as much of the spill as possible. Next slide. After the occurrence of the spill, CVWD implemented upgrades at Warp 10 to prevent another spill from occurring. This slide presents the full list of upgrades that CVWD has implemented since the spill occurred. The list is fairly long, so I will point out a few of the notable items. The notable items include additional auxiliary battery banks, more alarms, a headworks contingency program, and a designated control room operator role that was created by reassigning roles of existing employees. David Boyers will now provide a brief description of the enforcement policy's penalty methodology and then discuss the specific policy considerations that were used to calculate the final liability. David?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and board members. As Kevin introduced, I'm David Boyers, Assistant Chief Counsel in the State Board's Office of Enforcement and serving as counsel for the prosecution team on this particular matter today. It is a pleasure to be before you, and I'm happy to present a basic overview of how the policy works for those who may not be that familiar with it, and then I'll dive into the details and show you how we applied the methodology in this case. We can move to the next slide. So when determining the amount of liability to impose for a violation, the Water Code requires that we consider a number of factors, including the nature, circumstance, and gravity of the violation. And if the violation involved a discharge, which in this case we do have a discharge, the Water Code says to consider the toxicity of the material discharged, and whether the discharge was susceptible to cleanup or abatement. The code also requires that we look at the conduct of the discharger and take into consideration their degree of culpability, whether they did any voluntary cleanup, and whether they have a history of violations. Finally, the code says that we must consider the economic benefit obtained from the violation, look at the discharger's ability to pay, and anything else that justice may require. And, at a minimum, the statute and the policy say the penalty must be assessed at a level that recovers the economic benefit plus 10%. Next slide. The enforcement policy sets forth a detailed methodology that creates a stepwise approach for the water boards to consider each of these statutory factors in order to calculate the proposed liability. And the goal of this methodology is to create a fair, transparent, and consistent statewide approach to imposing penalties. Next slide. There's a lot on here, so don't try to read it as I go through. But this is really an overview slide of the 10-step penalty methodology, which kind of shows that there are three main parts to the 10 steps, and I'm going to go over each of these parts in the next several slides. We can move to the next one. So the first part looks at the violation itself and sets an initial liability amount based on really how bad the violation was. If we have a discharge violation, we start with step one and calculate the total harm or potential for harm score. And that score is made up of three things: the toxicity of the material discharged, rated on a scale from 0 to 4, with 4 being the most toxic. The harm or potential for harm score to beneficial uses on a scale of 0 to 5, with 5 being the most harmful. And the susceptibility to cleanup, with 1 meaning no cleanup was possible, and 0 meaning the material could be cleaned up. We add those numbers together, which gives us our final harm score. And step 2 considers how far the violation deviated from the underlying requirement, either minor, moderate, or major, and uses a table to assign a percentage multiplier for the maximum liability in the statute. So, for example, a violation that receives a harm score of 9 and a moderate deviation from requirements would get a multiplier of 0.5, meaning the initial liability amount would be 50% of the statutory maximum for the days of violation and the gallons discharged. Step 3 is essentially the same process, somewhat truncated for non-discharge violations. Next slide. I'm going to do a quick sidebar here on high-volume discharges. The enforcement policy provides that for high-volume discharges of sewage and stormwater, a reduction in the $10 per gallon maximum statutory liability may be used when determining the initial liability amount. For discharges between 100,000 gallons and 2 million gallons, a liability between $2 and $10 may be appropriate. And for discharges over 2 million gallons and for discharges of recycled water, the policy allows us to use $1 per gallon as the maximum. The policy allows for this reduction because in many instances, applying the statutory maximum for high volume discharges results in a penalty that can be disproportionately high. Next slide. The second part of the methodology considers the conduct of the violator and either increases or decreases that initial liability amount based on the conduct. And we use those multipliers to get a total base liability. And here we look at three variables: the discharger's culpability, which is the act that gave rise to the violation, their cleanup and cooperation, which is how they responded to the violation, and their history of violations. For culpability and for cleanup, a neutral score of 1 represents that the discharger met the expected standard of care, while a score of above 1 means the discharger failed to meet the standard of care, and that results in an increase in liability. A score below 1 means the discharger exceeded the standard of care and results in a decrease in liability. For history of violations, if there is a history, the policy says that the score should be at least 1.1. If there's no history, the score should be 1. We don't ever go below 1 for history of violations because we expect folks to stay in compliance with their permits. Once we have those scores, step five is essentially doing the math, which gives us our total base liability score. Next slide. The last part of the methodology is really a final check on the total base liability amount to ensure that nothing else warrants an adjustment. We look at a number of things here, including the discharger's ability to pay, the economic benefit derived from the violation, and any other factors that justice may require. Last, we make sure the final liability amount is within the statutory maximum and the statutory minimum. In the next several slides, I'll explain how we applied this methodology to the specific facts of this particular SSO event. Next slide. In this case, the material that was discharged was raw sewage. Untreated sewage contains high levels of suspended solids, pathogens, nutrients, oils and grease, and other pollutants. We assigned a toxicity score of 3 or above moderate because the material poses a direct threat to potential receptors. A toxicity score of 3 for sewage is consistent with other SSOs throughout the state. For the harm score, we also selected a score of 3, which represents a moderate harm. Here, we are looking at the harm or potential harm the discharge had on the specific beneficial uses in the receiving water. In this case, the receiving water was the Whitewater River stormwater channel, which includes, among other beneficial uses, Rec 1 and Rec 2. Due to the seasonal lack of flow in the Whitewater channel and the relatively quick percolation of the discharge, the risk of actual harm and exposure to these sensitive beneficial uses was limited. For susceptibility to cleanup, the majority of the spill percolated through the channel bed and was therefore not susceptible to cleanup. Therefore, a score of 1 was assigned, giving us a total combined harm score of 7. Because no spills are allowed under the law, the deviation from requirements here was major, which results in a multiplier of 0.41, or 41% of the statutory maximum. As I mentioned previously, the enforcement policy allows for a reduction in per gallon liability for high volume discharges. In this case, the prosecution team selected a value of $5 per gallon. With a multiplier of 0.41 and a high volume reduction to $5 per gallon, the initial liability amount for the total gallons discharged in this case on one day came to $265,759.95. We then turn to the next part of the methodology, which looks at the conduct of the discharger. And I think we're switching slides here. Next slide. That's great. Thank you. For culpability, we selected a score of 1.1, which represents a 10% increase in the initial liability amount. Although the discharger performed routine maintenance on the UPS that failed, there were a lack of redundancies in the system that could have prevented or minimized the discharge. For cleanup and cooperation, we chose a score of 0.9, which represents a corresponding 10% decrease in the initial liability. This factor was selected because the discharger exceeded our expectations, in response to the spill, the details of which Kevin covered earlier. With respect to history of violations, a multiplier of 1.1 was selected because CVWD has had several effluent violations in the last 5 years, which are shown in Table 1 of page A10 of the settlement agreement. Multiplying the factors for culpability, cleanup, and cooperation, and history of violations to the initial liability amount results in a total base liability of $289,412.59. Next slide. The final part of the methodology is the checks and balances that I discussed under steps 6 through 10. There were no adjustments made based on ability to pay or other factors. And based on the number of corrective actions taken by the discharger, we calculated the economic benefit plus 10% to be just under $37,000. Again, those details are laid out specifically in the settlement agreement. We are also within the statutory maximum and the minimum liability amounts. The only adjustment that we made was a reduction made to further settlement and to account for the inherent risks in litigation, giving us a final liability amount of $236,792.10. Next slide. And with that, the prosecution team recommends that the board approve the settlement agreement and the proposed liability amount. Next slide. And myself and the rest of the team are here to answer any questions that you have. I also understand the discharger is here who can also answer questions. Thank you very much.
Before we do board questions, are there any comments from the discharger?
Good morning, board. My name's Dan Charlton. I'm the assistant general manager of the Coachella Valley Water District. I'm an engineer, but I'm responsible for all the operations at CVWD. I would like to first say that I appreciate the collaboration from your team. This is what I would equate to a perfect storm. And an UPS unit failing, the word UPS in itself is uninterruptible power supply, and it's supposed to kick in when we lose commercial power. It did not. I think we've, with all three of our plants, we've implemented a multi-pronged level of redundancy since this event, a series of significant redundancies that will hopefully never will prevent something similar in the future. And with that, I'm here to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Since you're up, any questions for the discharger? Okay. Any comments from the public?
Thank you.
No, Chair Sattler, there is none.
Awesome. All right. Questions, comments, discussion from the board?
Yeah, I just have a question for David on the calculation enforcement policy factors where you came into a number 7. The second item, actual harm, it says 0 to 5. And you said there was no flow at the time. You gave them a 3. How would they have gotten a 2 or a 1? Or is that possible?
Those are really good questions. There certainly is flexibility in how we apply the harm score. The policy does define each level of harm between 0 and 5, and I have those descriptions, and I can certainly go into the details about how the policy says, you differentiate between a 2 and a 3. Some of it is what we've seen in the past. A lot of it is based on how the policy reads. In this particular case, I'll just as a caveat say I wasn't actually the attorney during the settlement negotiations. We had an attorney who left, so I'm speaking generally on the policy here. But the description for a 5 is pretty, I wouldn't say discreet, but it requires long-term impacts to beneficial uses, generally 5 days or more. 4 is a little less than that. 3 is a little less than that. 2 and 1 are obviously, and then 0 is negligible impacts to beneficial uses. I think in my presentation we said that there were no expected REC 1 and REC 2 beneficial uses at the time. That certainly played into our consideration of the 3. And I don't know if Cassandra or any other members of the team want to talk about, how we decided between a 2 and a 3. But I do think there's flexibility in that, decision at the end of the day. We thought it was there are sensitive beneficial uses. This was sewage. But at the end of the day, there were no long-term impairments to beneficial uses due to the event.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any additional questions, comments, or discussion? Okay. With that, I will close the hearing. The hearing is now closed. May I please have a motion to adopt agenda item 7, which is a settlement agreement and stipulation for entry of administrative civil liability order for the Coachella Valley Water District.
So moved.
Second.
A second.
Motion a second. All right, please roll call vote.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. For the next few items. The agenda is being revised. We now hear item 9, the cease and desist order for Christopher L. Heltebrand. After item 9, we will then hear item 8, the cease and desist order for Christiane Green. Okay. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 9, which is a cease and desist order for Christopher L. Heltebrand for a residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 58758 Natoma Trail, Yucca Valley. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedure dated July 16th, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between an advisory team and a prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Paul Rasmussen, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of the board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Emma McCorkle and Michael Perez, and David Boyer's assistant chief counsel for the Office of Enforcement. The discharger is represented by Christopher L. Heltebrand. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. Okay, please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The order of the speakers for this item are presentation by Michael Perez, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member comments and discussion, after which I will close the hearing. Mr. Perez, if you will please begin with your presentation.
Good morning, Chair
Satin.
Sorry,
before you start, this is, yes. Is this the right presentation?
Christopher Heltebrand.
Yeah.
Christopher Heltebrand.
Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, members of the public. I am Michael Perez. I am the enforcement coordinator for this regional board, and I have taken the oath. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Christopher Heltebrand, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The prosecution team on this case is myself, Michael Perez, Emma McCorkle, and Cassandra Owens from the Regional Board, and David Boyers, Assistant Chief Counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The property is located at 58758 Natoma Trail in the town of Yucca Valley and is owned by Christopher Heltebrand. Next slide, please. In this presentation, I will be providing a brief summary of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, the location of the property that is subject to the prohibition, outreach conducted by the High Desert Water District, outreach conducted by the regional board staff, the proposed cease and desist order, then finally staff's recommendation. Next slide, please. First, let's review why the town of Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition was necessary. The town of Yucca Valley's primary drinking water source is groundwater from the Warren Subbasin of the Morongo Groundwater Basin. Beginning in 1993 through 2005, the number of homes approved for construction in the town of Yucca Valley increased significantly, as shown by the graph on the right-hand side of the slide. Because there was no community sewer system available at the time, these homes utilized septic tanks exclusively for the wastewater treatment. Septic tanks discharge nitrates and other wastes to groundwater. The illustration on the left side of the slide depicts a typical septic system and how it works. It's basically made up of a septic tank that separates the solids from the liquids, where the liquids then go into a leach field or a seepage pits and then drain to groundwater. In 2003, a USGS study found that the increase in nitrate contamination in the Warren Subbasin was a result of wastewater loading to groundwater. This increase in nitrates posed a significant threat to public health, as is widely known that the use of nitrate-contaminated drinking water to prepare infant formula can be harmful to infants and even fatal. Next slide. The USGS study mentioned in the previous slide, and The USGS study mentioned in the previous slide reported that the primary cause of nitrate pollution in the Morongo groundwater basin was due to septic tank effluent from households, commercial, and industrial facilities within and surrounding the town of Yucca Valley. According to the study, from early 1995 through 2001, the nitrate as NO3 concentrations in groundwater in the Warren Subbasin increased from a background concentration of 10 milligrams per liter to more than the US EPA water quality maximum contaminant level of 45 milligrams per liter. Next slide. In response to the increase, on May 19, 2011, Regional Board adopted a resolution to prohibit the discharge of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems in the town of Yucca Valley and made the resolution a top priority. Then on January 17, 2018, the High Desert Water District started the construction of a wastewater reclamation facility. The facility would provide a higher level of treatment to collected wastewater, thus controlling the concentration of NO3 or nitrate concentration discharged to groundwater. Next slide. The Regional Water Board resolution led to an amendment to the Regional Water Board's basin plan, which consists of a phased septic tank prohibition on new and existing septic systems within the town of Yucca Valley. This illustration depicts the town of Yucca Valley and the two phases to be implemented. We are currently implementing phase one, which has an implementation schedule in the basin plan whereby December 31st, 2023, the discharge of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems shall be prohibited or shall be prohibited when a municipal sewage collection system becomes available. Once either of those dates is triggered, the discharger is required to cease discharging. The discharger is required to cease discharging from the on-site wastewater treatment system within 180 days and connect to the municipal sewage collection system. Next slide. This illustration depicts phase one area in a more detail and includes the stages within phase one. The different stages designate the specific date of when sewer became available. The property belonging to the discharger is located at 58758 Notoma Trail, which is the vicinity of where the arrow is pointing. And as you can see, the property is located within stage one. The stage one area had a sewer availability on November 4th, 2019. Therefore, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to sewer system 180 days after November 4th, 2019, which sets a compliance date of May 2nd, 2020. Next slide. This slide demonstrates the distance of sewer to the discharger's property as less than 200 feet. The blue shaded area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the location of the sewer main. The black line depicts the lateral to the property. The white dot, which is just within that red circle, depicts the approximate location of where the septic system is located. And down on the right lower corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale, which suggests that the lateral is about 50 feet in length. The basin plan sewer is being available. The basin plan defines sewer as being available for residential parcels when the public sewer on any building or exterior drainage facility connected thereto is located less than 200 feet from any existing or proposed building or exterior drainage facility on the parcel, and the parcel abuts and is served by such public sewer. Therefore, this property met the criteria of sewer availability as defined in the basin plan. Next slide. This slide and the next slide depicts the attempts to notify the discharger of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition and the requirement to cease discharging to the groundwater via septic tank. The basin plan requires that the discharger be notified prior to the respective sewer availability date, and as I demonstrated two slides ago, the sewer became available to the discharger in November 2019, and therefore set a compliance date to cease discharging and connect to the sewer as of May 2020. As such, the High Desert Water District sent their first notification of the upcoming sewer availability during the month of April 2018 and sent a second notification of the upcoming sewer availability during the month of August 2019. Next slide. In addition to receiving notices from the High Desert Water District prior to the sewer availability, the discharger also received notices after the sewer availability date from the Regional Board staff. On December 11th, 2020, Regional Board issued the discharger a notice of violation. The notice of violation notified the discharger of the prohibition of the on-site wastewater treatment systems for the Tanayaka Valley and directed him to comply by ceasing to discharge from the on-site wastewater treatment system and connect to the community sewer system. On November 19, 2021, the Regional Water Board issued the discharger a second notice of violation and again directed him to comply with the prohibition. On August 14, 2023, Regional Water Board staff issued an additional certified letter in an attempt to contact the discharger to compel compliance. On August 18, 2023, Regional Board staff had a conversation with an individual regarding the property where the Regional Board staff recommended that the owner seek compliance with the prohibition and avoid further enforcement actions. Mr. Hildebrandt has not responded to the notices of violation or attempts to seek compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition. Therefore, the prosecution team prepared a tentative cease and desist order with a time schedule to mandate compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in a timely manner. Next slide. To notify the discharger of this hearing and in accordance with the hearing procedures and the advisory team's direction, the prosecution team sent the tentative cease and desist order to the discharger via certified mail, sent the hearing procedures via certified mail, sent the evidence via certified mail, and sent the presentation slides and witness list via certified mail. Mailing was necessary because the discharger did not provide an email address. Next slide. About the cease and desist order, if adopted, the cease and desist order would compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance with a timely schedule. The cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit documentation such as a cost estimate to connect to the sewer system and decommission the septic tank by October 10th, 2024. It would require the discharger to submit a certification of connection to the sewer system by November 11, 2024. It would require the discharger to be in full compliance by December 1st, 2024. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond the discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from the executive officer. Next slide. The prosecution team identified one type error on the proposed cease and desist order that should be corrected before being adopted. In paragraph 12 of the proposed cease and desist order, the year of the phone conversation should be corrected by changing it from 2024 to 2023. Next slide. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other wastes to groundwater. The sewer has been available to the discharger since approximately November 2019. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging since May 2020. The discharger was notified by the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability. The discharger was notified by Regional Board after sewer availability. The cease and desist order sets a reasonable timeline for compliance. The cease and desist order allows for requests for an extension when circumstances are beyond the discharger's control that would affect the schedule. And finally, Mr. Hildebrand has not responded accordingly to a notice of violation and subsequent request to come into compliance with the prohibition. Next slide. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order with the change noted. This ends our formal presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Do we have the discharger with us? I'd like to offer any comments. Any comments from the public? Okay, any questions and comments from board members?
Scott here. Do you want to tell them what
your microphone?
Do you want to tell what the High Desert Water District has to offer these people?
I'm going to actually intervene here. Okay. Ed may have some background with the High Desert Water District, but he should not be offering testimony.
It shouldn't be part of the testimony? Is that what you just said?
Not in terms of a narrative summary of what things are. I think you can ask, Michael is perfectly capable of answering those questions in this context.
Okay. Michael, do you know if the discharger was ever contacted by High Desert Water Agency to help them hook up?
They were contacted, like I said, those two times, and I did suggest for them to go to High Desert Water District because High Desert Water District did have links to assistance. Okay. And
So they were told. Okay, that
yes,
was my comment.
Told.
Okay.
Two questions. One, the voicemail from the presumed owner indicates that they haven't either owned it or resided in the house for a number of years. One, have you verified occupancy of the property? And two, how was this voicemail addressed?
As far as verifying occupancy, that's not necessarily, that doesn't remove the threatening to release wastewater, because whether the resident lives in the property, somebody can easily rent it, and you would have that discharge of wastewater to ground, so it doesn't remove the threat. But I did confirm residency just less than 5 days ago. Went to a program called Land Vision, and it lists the current owner, and there's been no transactions of that property being transferred to somebody else.
Is that the extent of, that's all you did?
Oh, I also went into the county assessor's office website, mm-hmm. and looked that up as well, and it still listed Christopher Hildebrand as the owner.
So that's title ownership?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So your argument is that there is a threatened discharge because title has not changed hands?
No, I'm saying that Mr. Hildebrand is responsible because he's identified as the owner, but the threat is there regardless of who lives there.
Can you further elucidate that? Explain,
sure.
Like break that down for
okay.
us.
The threat of discharging exists if there's a home that can be occupied, because it doesn't matter whether the owner lives there, or a relative, or a renter. What we're trying to prevent is discharge to groundwater, and the only way we can remove that threatened discharge to groundwater is to have that septic tank decommissioned and find an alternative for wastewater treatment. And in this case, sewer is less than 200 feet.
Chair Peter, just for your edification, back in 2015, the High Desert Water District went through an assessment district. So every parcel within the septic prohibition was assessed and noticed. So whether you owned the property at that time or subsequently, you would have been notified of the assessment district that was paying for the sewer and that you were required to hook up when sewer became available.
Okay, so do we have any idea? So basically,
it's the prosecution team's position that as long as there is a house with a septic tank on the property, there is a threatened discharge from that septic system.
That's correct.
Have you looked at the property at all?
For this property, we did a series of site visits, and this could have been one of the properties that we visited.
Sure.
When was that site visit?
September 21st, 2023.
Okay. Do you say could have been? Do you know whether or not it was you actually saw this property?
We visited 17 properties that day.
Uh huh.
And the site visits were to learn why some of our mail was being returned.
I see.
And some owners don't live on the property, and some do. And so.
Yeah, this one said it was in La Habra, correct?
Correct.
That was the mailing address.
That's the owner's address.
Okay.
So it's most likely that we did not visit that one, but I have done Google search for how old it is, for whatever age that those photographs are, street view, and there is a property there. And I was not told otherwise by the person on the phone.
So wait, you looked at like a Google street view?
Yes.
Do you have any recollection about what you saw?
Yes, it was a home with a car in the front driveway. It wasn't boarded, and looked like it could have been inhabitable, if not by them, by somebody else.
So it didn't look abandoned to you?
It did not look abandoned.
Was this was the date of the street view within the last year or so?
Yes, definitely.
So, Michael, there are, what, roughly 4,000 parcels in Phase 1, and what? How many are left to hook up, 200?
About 180.
Right.
About 180 left to hook up out of an original 4,400.
Right.
And those were, like I mentioned before, those were developed parcels that have active sewer flows. That's what we're the list we were given.
I'm sorry, what was that last part? You said there were active sewer?
Septic
flows.
Septic, right.
I'm still, I don't know what to do with this voicemail. Did you follow up with the Eileen? What's her? To find out, I mean, yes. More information?
Yes, that I requested that she send us proof of them not owning the property, and she did not provide that proof.
I have a quick question. So you said that there was a conversation with the spouse or someone who identified themselves as the spouse back in August of 2023. Who did they talk to?
I spoke to Elaine.
It was you who
they talked to. I spoke to her.
Okay.
I spoke to her.
And so did she say the same thing as, sorry. Did she say the same thing that she said in that voicemail transcribed on March 4th?
Yes, same thing, that they were not the owners.
Would it seem, based on the presence of cars in the driveway, that you recalled seeing on Google Street View, would that seem to be inconsistent with her statement, basically implying that they've had nothing to do?
Sure.
Would you characterize her statement as saying that she has had do you think it's an accurate characterization to say that her email suggested that she had had nothing to do with the property for several years?
No. Oh, what? The reason why? What I was looking for was whether they were the owners of the property or not. I did not, or interested as to who lived there. I was interested as to whether the home was inhabitable, and who the owner was, because ultimately the owner is responsible for those upgrades and connecting to sewer. And if that's what they chose to do.
If they don't own the property, this doesn't mean anything that we're doing to them. If they're gone and don't own it, it doesn't affect them.
Legally?
If they don't own the property, yeah. Well, this is putting a septic prohibition on that specific parcel. If they do not own it, it does not impact them. So based upon this voicemail that said they haven't owned it for years, this has no bearing on them, only on that parcel.
I'm going to disagree with that, respectfully. We are issuing a cease and desist order to these individuals. If the prosecution team hypothetically were to find that a discharge is further taking place by these people or persons under their control, you know, as with similar facilities, we say that the person who owns a facility or who possesses the facility is responsible for the discharges and the condition of the land and things like that. The person operating the septic system would also be liable, but if we are right now issuing a cease and desist order to someone who is stated as owning the property, there could still be potential liability. I would have to further consider that. But I guess my point was in the in the line of questioning that I was engaging in, is that if there are so just to recap, Mr. Perez said he went on Google Street View. He observed a car in the front. None of the house was not boarded, and that image that he saw was within the last year. That would apply continued occupancy after the person. Basically, the voicemail implied that they had no involvement with the property, but clearly, based on what Michael said about the street view, someone is living on that property. Regardless of whatever she says, whether it's a tenant or somebody is. So they're still the title owner. So they're.
Yeah, but I said if they don't own the property, if they have no right to it, this would not impact them. And the way I understood the assessment district worked was the property owner was responsible for the paying the assessment. And once the property was hooked up, it was the property owner because the maintenance fees were going on the property tax were responsible for paying for it.
That assessment has no bearing on what we're doing right now.
I know, but I'm saying if they don't own the property, how does this impact?
Well, I don't think it's been established that they don't own the property. That's the problem.
Well, that's what
this Yeah, but
says.
This is just some voicemail versus county records.
No, I understand it, but I'm saying if they don't own the property, this wouldn't apply to them. So if she is accurate in describing this and they have nothing to do with ownership of that property, this doesn't impact them.
I think we have undisputed evidence that they are still the title holder of record, and even if there could be any delinquency in terms of or if they are behind on their mortgage, that title has not transferred to another party. Based on the evidence that the prosecution team has provided, title has not transferred to another party, and so they are still technically the owner of this property. They are still the owner. No one else. We don't have any evidence suggesting that someone else owns it.
So
they just suggest
it?
That it was sent. It was going to be sent to foreclosure at some point. That's what the voicemail essentially says.
Did you guys check Airbnb or Vrbo or any of those short-term rental sites to see if this is listed on it?
Did not.
I would suggest contacting the water district and see if there's water service to that property and in whose name it is.
Water bills, okay. Do you think that it's fair to say that for future reference, water bills might be, if someone's paying for water to be delivered to that property, it's going somewhere. And that means that would it be fair to say that there's an active discharge coming from a septic tank?
We're trying to establish responsibility and ownership. Sure. So a bill going to a property could be in somebody else's name.
Yes.
And based upon.
But water's going there.
Okay.
And based upon your presentation and all the notifications that High Desert Water District did to this property, I would assume they were doing it to the
Correct.
Property owner since they had access to all that information.
And I'd like to add that The contact information did come from High Desert Water District, and so we're going by information that we're helped with.
I just want to just make an observation here. It's important to connect and bring this back to the Water Code section. Water Code 13301 allows us to, or we issue a cease and desist order when the board finds that a discharge in violation of WDR's waste discharge requirements or a discharge prohibition is either taking place or threatening to take, like a discharge is either happening or threatening to occur. So we can talk about ownership and responsibility for this property, but that's not really disputed here. The question is whether or not there will be any further discharges from this septic system on this property. That's what we're caring about. And actually, I do have a quick question. Does a septic system continue to discharge waste? Let's say that someone flushed a toilet 3 weeks ago, and so that wastewater, you know, however many gallons, you know, go into the septic tank. Is there a continuing discharge?
I would not think so. Just intuition and looking, maybe the size of the tank. Maybe it doesn't.
How does the septic system work?
Well, when you flush a toilet, it goes into a tank, which is called the septic tank. The septic tank separates the solids from the liquids, and the liquids go on to a leach field or seepage pit.
Mm-hmm.
So by you saying continuing, I would think it would just be if it's topped out where the next volume of water, a gallon, half gallon, it would go into the leach lines or seepage pit. But after that, if nobody's flushing, there should be no additional water going in there. Correct. If nobody's flushing, nobody's using the sinks, there would be no additional water. So continuing, it would not continue. But if somebody starts inhabiting it again and starts flushing, yes, it's going to continue.
Okay.
Hey, David, since the state put on the septic prohibition.
You mean we did?
Yeah.
You did.
So what does that entitle, what does that mean to the property owner?
It means after that date, they cannot be discharging waste to the waters of the state from their septic tank,
it's not waters of the state because there are no waters of the state up in Yucca Valley. That was determined.
But yes, there are. There absolutely are, and that's what we're talking about, groundwater. And we do our basin plan. I speak because I'm referencing the basin plan, and the basin plan designates the groundwater within the Yucca Valley Basin as waters of the state. And so if these are discharges, subsurface discharges to groundwater, they leave, you know, that leach field, and that leach field would be the point of discharge. Do we want to take a break?
No.
They were having a meeting over there.
Again, David Boyer's counsel for the team on this one, and I apologize for jumping up. If I might be heard on the legal issue that I think is at hand, if that's appropriate.
Sure.
Your counsel is correct to point out that the Water Code does require that we show a threatened discharge of a basin plan prohibition in order for you to adopt a cease and desist order. I think the issue that I'm struggling with is what is the temporal element of that threat? Does it have to be immediate? Does there have to be existing water delivery and folks flushing the toilet on a regular basis? I don't think the answer is yes. I don't think we have to show that. I don't think we have to drive by and knock on the door and say, hey, are you getting a water bill? Are you flushing your toilet today? Because if you are, here's a cease and desist order. I think our burden is to show that there is a septic system on the site. And as Michael has testified, those septic systems in and of themselves are a threat to groundwater. Even though there may be no water today, somebody may turn on the water tomorrow. And so I think the fact alone, and we have our burden of proof, and our burden is preponderance of the evidence, that there is a septic, and I think that's shown both by the fact that we did some drive-by inspections, but also the High Desert Water District looked into these homes and decided there was a septic and sent notices. So I think that's also indicative of the threat. And so I do think that we've met our burden of proof, both on the fact and the law, for you to have the authority to issue this cease and desist order. It's appropriately issued to the owner of record. owner of record got notice of all of these proceedings here today and had the opportunity to come here or not, appear on Zoom and submit any evidence in rebuttal to show that they didn't receive the notices, that they don't have a septic, that they're not the owner. That didn't happen. And we have a number of these lined up that we intend to bring to you today and in the future. So I want to make sure that we're very clear about what our burden of proof is. And as I said, I think our burden is to show there is an owner of the property, there is septic. As Michael testified, that septic system alone is a threat to water quality.
And I would concur with Mr. Boyer's characterization of, like, the threatened discharge and in terms of what is a threatened discharge and observations of the property that were even on street view that would indicate, that would suggest continued habitation, occupation, such that someone could flush the toilet at a later date would be enough. You know, it's, that home is readily occupiable. That would be, someone has to come do is either turn on the water and flush the toilet. Then there would be another discharge through septic system, and that would be enough to demonstrate a threatened discharge in my legal opinion. So I would concur with that. And I think that, you know, based on what they have, that threshold, as long as they cannot point to something specific as to like a line of analysis, you know, that says, no, this house could be occupied again, that could be enough to support a finding that there is a threatened discharge.
Right. And we did provide, if there was a financial hardship, that the executive officer could grant a waiver to the hookup.
Yeah, I'm not contesting. I mean, I follow the line of evidence. I guess my bigger, not even concern, I'm just like, what if the contesting of ownership of this property is kind of, I find baffling. And, you know, if they haven't been paying property taxes on it for 10 years, as they're claiming, like, why it hasn't been, you know, repossessed or taken to tax sales. It just strikes me as very fishy what's going on here. And I just would prefer that have been chased down more. But I don't contest that. I think there is an imminent threat to discharge from some possible usage of this property, whether through rental, short-term rental, or, you know, even if they're going to do an open house, somebody using,
you know, you bring faucet. Up a good point. Is there a way legally to do it to the parcel in addition to the owner, in case that owner is no longer the owner? Can it be on the parcel itself, or does it have to be on the registered owner at the time?
If that question is directed at me, then I think the answer is no. I think you need to issue the cease and desist order to somebody who has the ability to comply with the basin plan, which is the ability to go out and you know, pay to have the septic abandoned and hooked up. So okay. It's not, you know, you can't do a deed restriction or lien on the property to, well, as far as I know, I mean, our authority would be to issue to the owner for threatened violation of your basin plan prohibition. Whether the city or some other entity has that authority, I don't know.
And just to say that, you know, talking about ownership or control of that septic tank, you know, who has control of the tank? Many, you know, typically speaking, your average residential lease agreement, does not include responsibility. I mean, this is for a residential property. For a commercial property, a triple net lease, for example, may include you're responsible for the whole facilities, you know, like that kind of thing. But for residential properties, you're not going to assume ownership or control of the septic tanks. So the lessor is the one, you know, which is almost always the title holder, is the person with ownership or control of that the OTS, the on-site wastewater treatment system.
Yeah.
So that would be sufficient.
And I just one final follow-up, and I can move this forward and be done with this particular issue. But is all of the ownership information predicated on county data, or is there any sort of independent verification not using county sources?
County.
County, it's all county. Okay.
That's how the assessment district was formed, and that's what was best and creator of the law firm said we had to go by what was publicly known
exactly.
Through county data.
Exactly. Well, I was again, I mean, just to observe that the county is not infallible in their data, in their record keeping.
No, so I agree. I agree.
So anyway, I'll be done.
Just one comment. Just to let everybody know that the water is a utility, of course, and so is electric. Well, electric, when somebody goes off and they have an electric bill, it follows the person. When somebody leaves a property, it follows the property. It stays with the property. So what I'm getting at is High Desert should know who's paying that bill. If there is a bill, they should know if it's in default. And if it is, then what usually a water district does is at the end of the year, they put it on the property taxes. They just put it on the property taxes of the owner. So what I'm saying is they might have, you know, more information than you think on that property.
Any other comments or discussion? Okay. All right, well then I can close the hearing. Thank you. Sorry, wrong direction here. Okay, is there a motion to adopt agenda item 9, which is a cease and desist order for Christopher L. Hildebrand?
Yes, I'll so move.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. Roll call vote.
Hold on. The prosecution team has requested a change to the date in paragraph 12.
Okay, so.
I will revise my motion to revise the date.
And that the date being, just a point of clarification, the prosecution team has requested for paragraph 12 that the year mentioned instead of August 18th, 2024, finding 12 would be revised to say August 18th, 2023.
Okay,
that is the change requested by the prosecution.
I revise my order, my motion to approve adding that what our attorney just said.
And that was a second as well?
Second.
Okay. Roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. Going back now to item 8. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 8, which is a cease and desist order for Christiane Green for a residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 6488 Linda Lee Drive, Yucca Valley. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedure dated July 16th, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between an advisory team and a prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Paul Rasmussen, the board's executive officer, and David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of the board's Assistant Executive Officer Cassandra Owens, Board Staff Emma McCorkle and Michael Perez, and David Boyers, Assistant Chief Counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger is represented by Christiane Green. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there is not.
I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. Please state your name, affiliation, and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The order of the speakers for this item are presentation by Michael Perez, board staff, comments from the discharger, comments from the public, board member, comments and discussion, and then I will close the hearing. So Mr. Perez, if you could please kick us off.
Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board, members of the public. My name is Michael Perez, and I have taken the oath. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt the cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Christiane Green, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is provided in the Water Quality Control Plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The prosecution team on this case is myself, Emma McCorkle, Cassandra Owens from the regional board, and David Boyers, Assistant Chief Counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The property is located at 6468 Linda Lee Drive in the town of Yucca Valley and is owned by Christiane M. Green. Next slide. In this presentation, I will do a quick overview of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition because it is exactly the same as in the previous presentation, and I will give a quick overview of the outreach by the High Desert Water District for the same reason. The evidence related to these items, however, is in the record. Instead, I will focus this presentation on the location of the property that is subject to the prohibition.
Mr. Perez, are you incorporating your last presentation by reference?
Yes.
Thank you.
So instead, I will focus on the location of the property that is subject to the prohibition, outreach taken by regional board staff, the proposed cease and desist order, then finally staff's recommendation. Next slide. The Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition was adopted by this regional board to address increasing nitrate concentration levels in the Warren groundwater subbasin, which is a drinking water source for the town of Yucca Valley. The increases in nitrate concentrations were due to discharges of wastewater into groundwater via on-site wastewater treatment systems, such as septic tanks. The Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the basin plan, includes a two-phase implementation plan, and we are currently implementing phase one. That phase prohibits discharges of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems by December 31st, 2023, or when a municipal sewage collection system becomes available, and whichever one of those two comes first. It is further stated that the discharger is required to cease discharging from an on-site wastewater treatment system 180 days after either those two dates are triggered. This slide depicts phase one, and it further details specific areas within phase one of when sewer became available, which are referred to as stages. Click one. Yeah. The property's location is approximately depicted by the red arrow and is within stage two of phase one. Stage two area had a sewer availability on March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to the sewer system 180 days after March 2020, which sets a compliance date of September 2020. Next slide. This slide demonstrates the distance of sewer to the discharger's property as less than 200 feet. The blue shaded area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the location of the sewer main. The black line depicts the lateral to the property. The white dot depicts the approximate location of the septic tank. And down on the right lower corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale. The lateral depicted on the slide and within the red circle appears to be less than 50 feet in length. And the basin plan defines sewer as being available for residential parcels when the public sewer on any building or exterior drainage facility connected thereto is located less than 200 feet from any existing or proposed building or exterior drainage facility on the parcel, and the parcel abuts and is served by such public sewer. Therefore, this property met the criteria of sewer availability as defined in the basin plan. Next slide. As mentioned in this presentation's outline, in addition to receiving notification from the region board staff after sewer availability, the discharger was sent notices from the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability date of March 2020. The High Desert Water District sent notifications to the owner regarding sewer availability in April 2018 and August 2019. Copies of these letters are included in the item package. On December 11th, 2020, Regional Water Board staff issued the discharger a notice of violation, notifying her of the prohibition and her requirements to comply. On November 19, 2021, a second notice of violation was issued and again directed her to comply with the prohibition. And on August 14, 2023, Regional Board staff issued an additional certified letter to contact the discharger and seek compliance. The discharger has not responded to the notices of violation or additional attempts to encourage compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition. Therefore, the prosecution team prepared a tentative cease and desist order with a time schedule to mandate compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in a timely manner. I'll explain the details of cease and desist order later in this presentation. Next slide. To notify the discharger of this hearing and in accordance with the hearing procedures and the advising team's direction, the prosecution team sent the tentative cease and desist order to the discharger via certified mail. The tentative cease and desist order was returned, so the prosecution team resent the tentative cease and desist order via process server. The hearing procedures and evidence for this case were also sent via process server. And finally, the slides and witness lists were sent via certified mail. Mailing was necessary due to the discharger not providing or not owning an email address. Next slide. If adopted, the cease and desist order would compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance with a timely schedule. The cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit documentation such as a cost estimate to connect to the sewer system and decommission the septic tank by October 10, 2024. It would require the discharger to submit a certificate of connection to the sewer system by November 11, 2024. It would require the discharger to be in full compliance by December 1st, 2024. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond the discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from the executive officer. Next slide. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. Sewer has been available to the discharger since March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging by September 2020. The discharger was notified by the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability. The discharger was notified by the regional board after sewer availability. The cease and desist order sets a reasonable timeline for compliance. The cease and desist order allows for requests for an extension when circumstances beyond the discharger's control affect the schedule, and the discharger has not responded accordingly to the notices of violation and subsequent requests to come into compliance with the prohibition. Next slide. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order. This ends our formal presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any comments from the discharger? Any comments from the public?
No.
All right, any comments from the board? Hearing none, I have a question. For these like non-communicative entities, I don't know, I think it's probably not too much to assume that they're not going to comply. Or like, what do we do come December if there's still no movement on hookups?
I think our attorney can
answer.
I'm happy to defer to your attorney if he wants to answer this question, but you do have authority to impose civil liability if a discharger fails to comply with a cease and desist order that's issued by you.
That's correct. But that would be, you know, subject to the enforcement discretion and whether or not a complaint for administrative civil liability is brought. So that's not something we're here to worry about too much. But yes, the idea of progressive enforcement and the idea of the way that the water code is currently set up, generally speaking, liability attaches after there is a cease and desist order and after there is non-compliance with the cease and desist order.
Understood. Okay. There's no questions or discussion. I'll entertain a motion.
I just have some more questions similar line, just to make sure that we have a good record. Have you looked at this property on Street View?
I don't recall looking at this property. It's possible. The mailing address is different, I believe, than where this property is located. I did go to the owner's address to attempt to verify whether it was to find out why our mail was being returned. Mm-hmm. So that's why we eventually seeked out process.
I see Exhibit 12 has the car checkout. So was there an inspection? Like, was this one of the properties that you would have driven past?
Yes, it would have been.
Did you see any properties on that trip where you got the sense that there was nobody ever going to live there?
Yeah, that's a good way to sum it up. We all the properties we visited did have a home, and none of them seem uninhabitable.
Okay. That's all.
And I guess, too, you made contact with the owner through the process server, so we've established that.
We established that.
They're a real person.
Right, exactly.
Okay. All right. Motion.
And there's no extras on this one, David? Okay, I will make a motion to approve item number, what are we on, 8, cease and desist order.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Chair Music? I'm sorry, Chair Satin.
Yeah, ouch. Didn't know you didn't like me. Aye.
Chair Satin.
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez.
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano.
Aye.
Board Member Music.
Aye.
Board Member Wright.
Aye.
Motion carries.
Self-quorum, I guess, if he departs. I guess I forgot to close that before we voted, but it was closed. Do I need, so we're good? Okay.
You're fine.
Yeah, it's apparently my MO here. Do we want to take a quick break while? Yeah.
I would recommend
okay,
that
yeah,
until we have our, well, we do have still have a quorum, but yes.
Yeah, we still have, so we have one more item on the contention calendar, contested calendar. We'll adjourn for 5 minutes, I guess. All right, we are back from our break and we'll continue on with item 10. I am now opening the hearing on agenda item 10, which is a cease and desist order for Pedro Luna for a residential on-site wastewater treatment system located at 6415 Ronald Drive, Yucca Valley. This hearing will be conducted in accordance with the hearing procedure dated July 16th, 2024. As explained in the hearing procedure, board staff have separated functions between an advisory team and a prosecution team. The advisory team consists of Paula Rasmussen, the board's executive officer, David Lancaster, the board's counsel. The prosecution team consists of board's assistant executive officer, Cassandra Owens, board staff Emma McCorkle and Michael Perez, and David Boyer's assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The discharger is represented by Pedro Luna. Madam Clerk, are there any speaker cards for this agenda item?
No, there isn't.
I will now administer the oath. All persons intending to speak on this item, raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do. All right, please state your name, affiliation, whether you have taken the oath before testifying. Order of speakers will be the same as the last two, Michael Perez, followed by discharger, followed by public comments, and then board discussion. Mr. Perez, the floor is yours.
There we go. Good morning, Chair Satin. Okay. Good morning, Chair Satin, members of the board and members of the public. My name is Michael Perez, and I have taken the oath. The prosecution team is requesting that you adopt a cease and desist order to compel the discharger, Pedro Luna, to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is provided in the water quality control plan for the Colorado River Basin region. The prosecution team on this case is myself, Emma McCorkle, Cassandra Owens from the regional board, and David Boyers, assistant chief counsel from the Office of Enforcement. The property is located at 6415 Ronald Drive in the town of Yucca Valley and is owned by Pedro Luna. Next slide. In this presentation, I will also do a quick overview of the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition because it's exactly as the same as it was in my first presentation. And I will give a quick overview of the outreach by the High Desert Water District for the same reason. The evidence related to these items, however, is in the record. Instead, I will focus this presentation on the location of the property that is subject to a prohibition, outreach taken by regional board staff, the proposed cease and desist order, then finally staff's recommendation. That's fine. Next slide, please. The Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition was adopted by this regional board to address increasing nitrate concentration levels in the Warren groundwater subbasin, which is a drinking water source for the town of Yucca Valley. The increases in nitrate concentrations were due to discharges of wastewater into the groundwater via on-site wastewater treatment systems, such as septic tanks. The Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition, which is included in the basin plan, includes a two-phase implementation plan, and we are currently implementing phase one. That phase prohibits discharges of wastewater from on-site wastewater treatment systems by December 31st, 2023, or when a municipal sewage collection system becomes available, whichever comes first. It is further stated that the discharger is required to cease discharging from the on-site wastewater treatment system 180 days after either of these two dates are triggered. Click one time. In this slide, it depicts phase one. It further details specific areas within phase one of when sewer became available, which are referred to as stages. The property's location is approximately depicted by the end of the arrow and is within stage two of phase one. The stage two area had a sewer availability on March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was to cease discharging and connect to a sewer system 180 days after March 2020, which sets a compliance date of September 2020. Next slide, please. This slide demonstrates the distance of sewer to the discharger's property as less than 200 feet. The blue shaded area depicts the discharger's property. The green line depicts the location of the sewer main. The black line depicts the lateral to the property. The white dot depicts where the approximate location of the septic tank. And down on the right lower corner of the illustration, there is a 50-foot scale. The lateral depicted on the slide and within the red circle appears to be less than 50 feet. The basin plan defines sewer as being available for residential parcels when the public sewer on any building or exterior drainage facility connected thereto is located less than 200 feet from any existing or proposed building or exterior drainage facility on the parcel, and the parcel abuts and is served by such public sewer. Therefore, this property met the criteria of sewer availability as defined in the basin plan. Next slide. As mentioned in the presentation's outline, in addition to receiving notification from regional board staff after sewer availability, the discharger was sent notices from the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability of March 2020. The High Desert Water District sent notifications to the owner regarding sewer availability in April 2018 and August 2019. Copies of these letters are included in the item package. On December 11, 2020, the Regional Water Board staff issued the discharger a notice of violation notifying him of the prohibition and his requirements to comply. On November 19, 2021, a second notice of violation was issued and again directed him to comply with the prohibition. And on August 14, 2023, Regional Water Board staff issued an additional certified letter to contact the discharger and seek compliance. The discharger has not responded to the notices violation or additional attempts to encourage compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition. Therefore, the prosecution team prepared a tentative cease and desist order with a time schedule to mandate compliance with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in a timely manner. I will explain the details of the cease and desist order later in this presentation. Next slide. To notify the discharger of this hearing and in accordance with the hearing procedures and the advisory team's direction, the prosecution team sent a tentative cease and desist order to the discharger via certified mail. The tentative cease and desist order was returned, so the prosecution team resent the tentative cease and desist order via process server. The hearing procedures and evidence for this case were also sent via process server, and finally, the slides and witness list were sent via certified mail. Mailing was necessary due to the discharger not providing or not owning an email address. Next slide. If adopted, the cease and desist order would compel the discharger to comply with the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition in accordance with a timely schedule. The cease and desist order would require the discharger to submit documentation such as a cost estimate to connect to sewer system and decommissioning the septic tank by October 10, 2024. It would require the discharger to submit a certificate of connection to the sewer system by November 11, 2024. It would require the discharger to be in full compliance by December 1st, 2024. And if there are any delays caused by circumstances beyond the discharger's control, the discharger may request a deadline extension from the from our executive officer. Next slide. In summary, the property has a septic tank that has been discharging or threatening to discharge nitrates and other waste to groundwater. Sewer has been available to the discharger since March 2020. Therefore, the discharger was required to stop discharging by September 2020. The discharger was notified by the High Desert Water District prior to sewer availability. The discharger was notified by Regional Board after sewer availability. The cease and desist order sets a reasonable timeline for compliance. The cease and desist order allows for requests for an extension when circumstances are beyond the discharger's control that affect the schedule. And the discharger has not responded accordingly to notices of violation and subsequent requests to come into compliance with the prohibition. Next slide, please. In conclusion, the prosecution team recommends that the board adopt the tentative cease and desist order. This ends our formal presentation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Perez. Discharger present for comments? Nope. Comments from the public? Comments from the board?
I just have a question. Roughly how much staff time do we use for these, an average for these three cease and desist orders?
I kind of lost count, but it's been very busy, especially if they do not own an email address, because we have to send everything via mail, certified mail, to make sure that they receive it.
So what's your best guess? 40 hours, 50, 100?
I want to say per case, I would say maybe about 50.
50?
50.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments?
I only saw the notices of violation that were sent to the dischargers were in English. Is that because that was the only language they're provided?
At the time, I was only aware of those. I'm talking about the cease and desist orders you said?
Yeah.
Yes, they were only in English.
And for the ones that were mailed, but they were returned, so it doesn't matter, but were those also only in English?
Yes, they were only in English.
Okay.
And in all the notices, my contact information was there.
Can you just briefly summarize for the record your any site visits or drive-bys to demonstrate occupancy?
I had a list of sites that I visit. This could have been one of the other ones that I also did a site visit. I visited a total of 17 sites.
Other questions, comments? Council?
Have you ever seen a picture of this house?
I don't recall. There's been many, and with 180 yet to connect, I did not only look at the 17. I've been looking at many others for other claims.
Okay. Do you have any other sense? So have you looked, you haven't looked at it on Street View? Do you remember whether or not this was one of the ones you saw?
I don't recall at the moment, but okay. There's a lot of them that I've looked at.
All right. No further questions.
I'm just curious, is this a very expensive process for the dischargers?
Currently, it depends on location of the of the septic tank, and if there's any obstacles in the way, like giant boulders or Joshua trees that they have to go around. But the cost estimate right now, without any assistance, it ranges from about $4,000 to maybe about $10,000 to connect and decommission the septic tank and have the arbor certification for the town of Yucca Valley.
And there's some assistance in the event that they need it?
There, I know there was some low interest loans and grants up to December 31st, 2023. At the moment, there is a link on the High Desert Water District's website that gives them an opportunity to apply for federal assistance. So there is a link that they can look into.
This property and the last property, are these in the neighborhood across from the Walmart in Yucca Valley?
It's very foggy. I don't recall.
Ronald is,
yeah. And I think it looks like it was very close to the last property as well, the green property. Okay. If there's no further questions or comments, I will close the hearing. And is there a motion to adopt agenda item 10, which is a cease and desist order for Pedro Luna?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right, roll call vote, please.
Chair Satin?
Aye.
Vice Chair Perez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran Serrano?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay. Thank you for prosecution team folks for that marathon of cease and desist orders. Board will now move on to information items on today's agenda, starting with the Executive Officer Report, which will be presented by Executive Officer Paula Rasmussen.
Good afternoon, Chair Satin, members of the board, members of the public. I'm bringing you up today on our office renovation. The renovation is starting. It will have four phases, and the first phase will start next week on the 16th. The first phase will include the offices along Fred Waring and along the back side over here, the south side, the west side. And phase one is planned to be completed by October 11th. Phase two will be renovation of the boardroom. And during the renovation, most of our staff will be working remotely. We will have a skeleton crew here just for office presence, but most of the staff will not be in the office unless they need to come in to do some work in the office and grab equipment and things like that. The final phase of the renovation will be completed by December 20th. And during the renovation, our board meetings will be held at another location. The October and November board meetings will be in the City of Palm Desert's boardroom. Also, because there have been several leaks in the building during rain events, the city is installing a new roof on the building, and the work started on the roof yesterday, and that will be ongoing for 2 months. So a lot of activity going on right now. Moving on, the governor's budget that was adopted for fiscal year 24-25 included a reduction of 10,000 vacancies statewide. Our preliminary projections for the regional have this regional board losing a couple of vacancies. However, this has not yet been finalized. In addition to the 10,000 vacancies statewide, all state agencies' operational budgets are being reduced by 7.95%. The state board is in the middle of developing plans to achieve this reduction. These reductions will cut across all regions, boards, and divisions. All of the reductions in vacancies or in operating expenses will be permanent, starting this fiscal year and continuing. Moving on, a conditional settlement offer for an expedited payment program relating to alleged violations of an order was accepted by the executive officer on August 22nd. The settlement offer was with the Imperial Irrigation District's El Centro Generating Station. The settlement addressed effluent violations of the NPDES permit and was for $21,000 in mandatory minimum penalties. And finally, the State Board has asked that the regional boards consider moving their December board meetings to the week of December 16th. This is because AGP has a very high demand for their audiovisual services for the week of December 9th. Our meeting is currently scheduled for December 10th, and an email was sent to board members regarding their availability. So if you could please let me know so we can confirm with the State Board whether or not we can move our meeting, I would appreciate it. And this concludes my update.
Hey, Paula, when you mentioned those cuts, hypothetically, if we have 50 employees potentially, does that mean we have 7.5% less or 3 or 4 less?
The operating budget is different from the vacancies.
Pardon?
The operating budget exercise will be different from the vacancies. So we're still in flux, but it's going to be a heavy cut statewide. Everybody, because there's only so many places the state can reduce the operating budget. So,
isn't most of our expense though employees for our operating budget?
It's a part of it, yeah. But they have told us that nobody will be laid off. Staff may have to change their jobs if the functions that they are in are impacted by the reductions.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Paula? Thank you. Comments from water board members. Any board members have anything to discuss?
No, not to discuss, but just to comment here. Jose Angel has invited the region and whenever they would like, or individual board members or whatever, to he would take us on a tour of the New River Improvement Project whenever we're ready. I'm thinking maybe with everything going on, maybe November, December, or whatever. You know, after we get all done with everything. So I just wanted to throw that out there that was an option at one point in time. So.
And I'll just mention I've been fortunate. I've been confirmed by the Senate, so I will be a board member for another 4 years. Sorry, Peter.
Any other comments? All right. Moving on to the chair's report. We held a chair's meeting September 3rd, last Tuesday. Topics of discussion included the budget, most of which was summarized by Paula, as well as an update on WQCC coming up in late October. It looks like right now it will definitely be in person. We're also looking into hosting it as a hybrid event with a virtual attendance option. More details to come. With that, I believe actually the board will be reconvening briefly into closed session for a few follow-up items, but this concludes the public component of our agenda. The next meeting is scheduled for October 15th, 2024.
Okay, so just to announce, you're going back into closed session?
Yes, yeah. We are going back into closed session.
All right, session. So just per Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision A1, the board is going to meet in closed session to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation of the performance of the executive officer.
Thank you.